And wasn't that entertaining? Hello, friends and neighbors. I am Samuel Trapp. This is Dam Radio, and you are listening to International Flavor. You are here with me, and I am very glad to have you. I have had some pretty good feedback on my younger brother from the other night and his wonderful... His very good and very fine discussions with me when we were talking last night, and it was live last night, and it was then replayed today at the 4 o'clock hour, and I was very glad that it was. I listened to a lot of JR today and part of my own show, but I had other things that were going on, and I've really been tired lately and not feeling all that well. And I've got some newscasts that I have been, working through, some interesting items that I have been in my personal life that I don't want to rat out just yet, in case they do not pan out the way I would like them to. But I am working on some pretty large fairs here, things that hopefully will pan out for me. And as soon as they do, I will definitely let you know. This, of course, is the live version of the show that I have been relocating from the 4 o'clock hour to the 9 o'clock hour. And I'm still going to go an hour and a half. We're still going to talk about the international events of the day and the things that are going along. But my brother and I were talking, we were talking afterward about some of the things that he's doing, and he's doing some AI things. Now, he is... very technically, gifted. If you listen to the show, you know he did very well last night, and all the things that he was talking about that are topics that I just love to talk about, too, and I could talk with him for hours, and often did and do. But he's working on some AI things, and first, I want to offer anyone to call if they would like to call in. Phone number is 573 746-8020. I would like for you to do so in the event that you have something to add to the mix. It would be nice to hear you. And if not, well, don't. That's perfectly fine also, because I have plenty to discuss and to talk about. But I wanted to, and it's kind of a sideline because I don't know a whole lot about it. I know that I've used it, but I had a meeting with some attorneys yesterday. And I do some consulting, and I work with some attorneys on various things. And I happened to be in Miami yesterday, and during the day, so it was a very long day for me yesterday, because I had to leave real early to get down there in time to do something. It's about a 3-hour drive and traffic and nonsensical nonsense that you have to put up with along the road and. You know, tollways and stuff like that, and the phone, and just interesting things. And anyway, I was there having some coffee with them and chatting about some of the things that we're working on. And they asked me, we were talking about something that we work on together, some legal document or other, some legal research and stuff like that. And one of them asked me, and he's an attorney who's actually older than me, and the other one is younger than me, and they both are more technically proficient than I. Let's call it that. And they said, one of them says to me, "So have you ever tried to use ChatGPT?" And I said, "Well, what's ChatGPT?" "Oh my gosh, if you haven't tried it, you need to, because if you're looking for interrogatories, or if you're doing some legal research, if you're looking for a case to back your theory, you can ask GPT, and you can ask what the theory is." And I was like, wow, in the area of law. Okay, now I'm a little bit on the paranoid side when it comes to that. I wouldn't let, you know, I don't claim to be God's gift to the planet of law. Obviously, I'm not. Right? I want to run into the troubles that I run into. Although, you know, I was targeted by the bozos at the bar and the corrupt individuals in the office of chief disciplinary council. Somebody shouldn't. Who regulates the regulators? You know. Do you remember the Stephen King book, The Regulators? Well, we have people who just love to regulate other people. They just love it, and if they can destroy you, boy, they will. And I don't understand that. I've never understood that. There are people who just like that. Like what's going on with Ike Skelton, you know? And I haven't followed enough of it. I hear it's delayed a little bit, and I know I have spoken, you know, a little bit about it, and I know enough, but I don't know current events, so don't go acting like I know much to talk about. But the people who are coming after him, it's BS, okay? It is complete horse manure that they are going to hunt a man down who's trying to do the right thing for people. It'd be different if you had a reason to go after him. But people, all these do-gooders who seem very prevalent, and I'm, you know, I don't care party, not party, but I'm telling you, on the liberal side, it is 10 times worse. It's like all the people claiming that you have to accept and be and love transgenders and gays and all of that. But boy, they'll hate you immediately if you don't. You know, they hate old white men. You know, they hate old white women. They don't like people telling them about how the way things used to be. Their way is the only way that matters. Their decision about what you get to tell a client or don't get to tell a client is the only thing that matters. It's the government hack who has never had to perform on his own, has never had to earn a living. You know, if he doesn't get his work done, if he doesn't represent his clients or manage to attract some new ones, well, it doesn't matter. He's under no deadline. He's under no pressure. And the government? Are you kidding me? Those guys, I'm not saying they don't work, and some of them I've been pretty impressed by, and I'm not talking just lawyers. I'm talking across the board. Those people, and we all know who you can pinpoint a government employee. You know, they're not in a hurry to get anything done, and you can pinpoint, you know, that they're, you know, they love their holidays, but God forbid you try to you know, come in the day before their holiday. Try that. See where you get without, you know, licking the vertical smile, as it were. You're not going to have any joy for whatever project you are trying to get done. And I really hate to think that way, but I've seen it over and over and over. And on the federal level, it is even worse than it is on the state level. And on the state level, it's worse than on the local level, but it still exists. Ladles and jelly spoons, it definitely exists. And you know, yes, you'll come across some good ones. You'll come across very good people in all walks of life. But it seems like, you know how I always point out that I think that Pickett. You know, it's a different percentage, obviously, for every profession out there, but you name it. On average, 10% of every profession is going to be a corrupt 10%, is going to be somebody that will not be a professional first. There'll be somebody who will twist a system first, twist a system for themselves first and their friends first, and screw you over, you know, no doubt. There'll be the cashier at Walmart scalping, you know, a dollar out of every 20, you know, that wanders through, or a bad cop, a bad judge. You pick them. Somebody who's a crook, and there are crooks in all walks of life. And we don't need to think that just because you happen to, oh, geez, I'm in public service, you know, wouldn't know service if it reached out and bit you in the ass. And that is unfortunate. And so, at any rate, we were talking about how you create these, how you get these deadline things, and all of your chat GPT and your AI got a little upset with myself, and so I got sidetracked around onto one of my diatribes about the government employee. Sorry about that. But the the fact is that I was talking about ChatGPT, and these guys were saying, no, listen. And he pulls out his phone and he brings it out. So you're just talking AI. I said, you know, I heard of ChatGPT, but frankly, I thought it was a social media platform of some form or other. And it was a social media deal, you know. And he, and he gave me an example. You know, we were sitting there, and I forget what he said. It was something about, he goes, tell me, give me a list of 7 cases on a statute of limitations in a car accident case where a car hit a bicycle in Orlando, Florida, or something like that, and it reads you out this thing. And then he said it gave him a list of 7 or 8. Well, I used AI maybe a year ago. I was playing around with it, and by the way, when we were still sitting in the office and we were talking about what that was, I had a lunch appointment after that, so I didn't get to stay all that long. But you know, we were talking about ways to build legal practice and how to get some more. And I told him that I had read an article maybe 2-3 months ago about something called DeepSeek. And the younger attorney in the office, he goes, oh yeah, I've heard of that one. I've heard that one kicks the crap out of ChatGPT. And I said, well, it, I downloaded it. I know that. And they both go, oh, so you're familiar with it. Anyway, didn't say I wasn't familiar with AI. I said, I thought ChatGPT was a social media platform. But I don't understand how you could use AI in a law firm. I suppose to, you know, because If you're just asking it questions like find me 6 or 7 case about whatever, well, I've gotten fairly good at Google, asking Google questions. They go, no, this ain't Google. This goes out much further than Google. And I hear that the one, the DeepSeek one, goes out even further. And anyway, we chatted about it for 5 or 10 minutes. And I got to thinking about it and trying to use it. And the only thing I had used about 6-8 months ago, I had, and I really apologize if I told this story, but if I did tell this story, it was at least 6-8 months ago. But so there you have it. I will tell it again just because I want to. The I downloaded whatever it was a different AI, or I'm not sure which one it was, because it would allow you to go in and play with this AI generator where you can create a fake person. You create some model of yourself, your AI self, or your AI representative, and whatever it is you're going to do. And I'm sure there are experts that go through this, but I created and I don't want to bore anybody with this topic if they're not interested in it, but the fact is that I sat down and they said you can do free, you can create training videos, you can create, you know, whatever you want, and say, I want a video that lasts 9 minutes long, and I want to talk about this, and I want to include this topic, and I want the video to be this. And so I decided that I was going to make a 2-minute advertising commercial for real estate in Southwest Florida. And so I said something to the effect of, and I was just trying to come up with something to use for AI, and I'm sure other people have done this, but Jesus, you could get this thing to do whatever you want, because while I was sitting there, and again, technically challenged Sam, did within, I don't know, 10 minutes, it put together for me a very cool video. And I said, give me some pictures, some flyovers, and video of the coast between Port Charlotte and Sarasota. Give to me a couple of interior state parks or game preserves that are Floridian. Fly over a residential community and then fly over some restaurant areas, and give me these. I want a video advertising not only Southwest Florida between Sarasota and Port Charlotte, but I want to focus on nightlife, on family life, on eating. And I listed a whole bunch of crap, and I got this 2-minute video that was pretty damn killer. Having purchased television commercials in the past, when I was practicing law, and I had some television commercials and people had come to record them for you, they cost you freaking fortune. You know, people weren't going on TV. And now, everybody has their own brand. Like, my brand is the International Flavor brand, and I want to go out there and talk about things. Heck, I thought about, and I'm going to start using it. Well, this only thing about AI is because right before this call, I had promised my brother, Matthew, who was on last night, that I would, I wanted to hear a demo, because Matt does these creation of what AI does for you. Specifically, he's done it in law firms, and he's done it in other businesses, and he knows that I work with some law firms, and he goes, well, why don't you call, and we'll do a quick demo and a walkthrough of what you can do. And my God, he gave me some ideas that were just unbelievable. You know, he came in, and he had, and this is so cool, I hate to rat him out, you know, but I know he wouldn't mind for what he did. But he goes, well, just use it for something like you're going to write some interrogatories. He goes, I could write a program for this AI bot to call clients and ask them questions about their case, perhaps do an intake, perhaps do a discussion about the interrogatories, read and respond to the interrogatories, and have a draft set up for the attorney to sign and review prior to turning over to the other side and for filing. And you know, have everything. He goes, you can have, that's easy. Okay, well, that's painful. Nobody likes doing interrogatories. Nobody likes doing all that crap. It's, you know, it's, that's probably the most painful part of it. And it's part that costs the most to review and to go over and make sure you don't have it crappy, because this is evidence that you're providing. And so he says, well, let me get off the phone here, and I'm going to have somebody call you here in the next couple minutes. And then when they do, you just merge into the phone call with me. And I was like, okay. And he called me, and it was a male voice, Midwestern guy asking, you know, said, do you have time to go over your interrogatories? And he went through a whole little shooting match there, and then I merged the call, and he says, here's the AI guy's going to work with you. And Matt didn't say a word. He just sat there and listened, said, this AI bot was asking me about my alleged workers' compensation case, and said, I understand you had a workers' compensation case. We'd like to talk about that. First, let's talk about witnesses. And it started listing, you know, tell us about your witness. If you had somebody who, like, saw the accident that you had occurred, give me their name, their location, their phone number, you know, what they saw and what they're going to testify to. Now, all these are things that take you forever to get done. And when you're practicing law, you have to have staff to sit down and go through this course. I'm not saying you need to get rid of your staff and go AI, but Jesus, you definitely better think about it, because the rest of the world is. And it asked me a few questions, and Matt was listening in on the side, right? And then he goes, hey, Sam, switch to Russian. And I was like, holy crap, because that is interesting. And so I started speaking to it in Russian, and the guy says back to me, because I said, well, I think it would be, I said to this robotic person on the other end of the line, who didn't sound like a robot at all, I said, in Russian, I said, listen, I would prefer to speak in Russian because I have, you know, Russian is my native tongue, and I would prefer to speak in Russian and answer these questions in Russian, and you can translate them later. Without missing a beat, the guy goes back to me. He goes, well, I heard you say that you wanted to, that you would prefer to speak in Russian. I will switch, and we want to and ask 2-3 questions in Russian. And I responded in Russian and gave my evidence in Russian. And then when it was quiet for a minute, Matt goes, so how is his Russian? I said, well, better than mine. You know, he's not going to make any mistakes or any grammar endings. You know, every word in Russian can have up to 18 endings, you know. And they, you know, when you speak in Russian most time, oh, they easily know that you're not a Russian. I've been very, very much complimented many, many times by people who think that I'm from Russia, or my family's from Russia or something like that. My Russian is quite good. The other night I was in the banya, the bathhouse, the sauna. And there was a Ukrainian guy in there, and he had heard me speaking to another guy that I know from in there. So we were sitting in the bathhouse, just enjoying the evening, and he had been talking to me about whatever. And this other guy says, and the other guy had heard me, but I didn't know him. And so pretty soon everybody had left, and it was only the two of us, me and this Ukrainian guy sitting in the office. He said, what city are you from? And I said, what do you mean from here? I said, I live here. No. What city are you from? I said, Cincinnati. He goes, no. In Ukraine or Russia. He said, what city are you from there? I said, I'm not from there. I said, I'm an American. And, you know, it's a shocker if people could sit, because I can carry on in a whole conversation. You know, I don't mean to, you know, break my arm off, but patting myself on the back. But at the same time, it is kind of rare. And I can usually tell, especially with somebody whose family wasn't you know, Russian, or, you know, there's one of the lawyers in the office of lawyers that I work with, the younger guy that I was telling you a little bit about, he speaks Russian too. So his mom is speaks Spanish, and his dad speaks Russian, and his English is just as good as mine is, and his Spanish is fantastic, but he claims, and I think I agree, that my Russian is probably better than his. And that's probably true. And he, but at the same, and he grew up with one of his parents being Russian. But if you don't use it, you don't, you know, you're gonna lose it. Anyway, as when I switched that AI into the Russian, that was the incredible part, because that is where we run into problems in working with law firms down here, because there are people from so many different countries. So many, most of the ones in the Russian law firms are Russian speaking. They have a Spanish speaking attorney. They'll have a Creole is everywhere. And I've had to translate things into Creole, you know, for to send them. And I've had to, I bought a, I had to buy a translator. If Google Translate didn't work the for the Creole, then, you know, I would have to buy one for that. So this AI thing was, and I know this has nothing to do with the international events, but actually it does, because I had been using it for a little bit with all of these people that have different languages, and translating the documents through a program. If you're looking for a program that does a very, very good job of translating words in written words, and you're looking to translate it into just about any language quickly, easily, and it'll do 500 character paragraph, you know, for you. I use something called Reverso Context, and it is pretty accurate. You know, it sometimes is a little bit, you know, hokey. When I travel to like Brazil, Portuguese down there, I use for the written portions, I will type something or say something into your speaker of your phone, and it will instantly translate it into whatever language you want to translate it into. And very, very good success working with Uber drivers, working with restaurant places, trying to buy something, you know, whatever. It's those are in there. But if AI is allowing you to do it, if you can do it, ChatGPT or DeepSeek was very, very good. So what I've used so far, and you know, I guess I'm not too old to become less. I don't know, technically challenged than I am, but it would be. I was sorry to take so much of our time with that on AI today. But my brother is he's developing these programs for other people, and if you are looking for a consultant to take your to come up with ideas on your AI, tell you what. Matthew would be the one to do it. I want to give you my contact information if you'd like to reach out on that, and some of the videos and the books that he mentioned last night. You can reach me. My email address is samuelt@internationalflavor.com. The show with my brother that was really nice. We're planning on next Wednesday to do the follow-up to that and get to the 9/11 commission. The videos that he sent to me were unbelievable. You know, when you talk about I listened to, I didn't have time today to listen to the second half. It's a 4-hour video, and I only listened to the first 2 hours. But I'm telling you, the first 2 hours were hugely eye-opening. And I tell you, if what we all suspect to be true, if you don't feel that way after you look at it, I mean, you know, I'm not trying to convince you. I don't have any dog in that hunt, but I always felt the same way about it. And I've always been one of those people who go, no, our government wouldn't do that to you. No, our government isn't that corrupt. No, Hillary Clinton is just, she's just a nasty person. She's not, She's not a criminal, you know. She's just a horror story of a woman that you know, you just can't help but hate. You know, that I can understand, but I don't want to go around labeling her a criminal. It's just somebody who is downright offensive. You know, you don't want to be in the same room with something like that. I don't know, and I'm sure she would feel the same way about me. You know, in my thought process, or there are people. She's the one that called people like think like I do. I'm in the basket of deplorables. You know, I'm the deplorable person that you know doesn't. I don't. You're not going to convince me that the government are the good guys. You're just not going to do it. Not anymore. But I got to tell you, nobody wants to think that their government is the bad guys. Isn't that a shame? And now I can't help it. You know, the judiciary is a mess. The practice of law nationwide is a joke. You know, the what they put together, you know, to attack and to torment the people that they don't like from anywhere. The picking and choosing of who gets prosecuted and who can get away with any crime is what we are all sick of. We're sick of it. It's like I was saying, you know, when we started this conversation today about the intolerance on certain sides is just, it's unnecessary, number one, and number two, it's just wrong, you know, the intolerance. Well, I think I'm enough on the AI part, and I wanted to get to some news today. Did you hear the story, the horror stories about what went on in the Kashmir district of India? And I don't claim to be the all-knowing, especially when it comes to India. But Kashmir is a pretty district. It's they've had some troubles. They've, you know, Pakistan is very much in conflict with certain areas inside of India. And over the last few days, there's a small, I'm going to play for you a clip today that is just, it's depressing what they are doing over there. I heard JR today on his show today, and he was saying something that he was reading something, and I got offended's not the right word, but I wanted to say something about it because I know he wasn't reading his own words. He was doing what I do, sharing some things that he found of other people's memes and other people's words and other people's ideas. And one of them had to do with Muslims, and they were talking about Muslims this, Muslims that, and it was an interesting. I got the point. It was very nice, but I know hundreds of Muslims. I excuse me. Generally, have very little trouble with them. And they're very good people, just like in any religion. You know, you have some very good people. Now, I must admit that I don't know a whole lot of extreme. I haven't met any extremists, and I probably wouldn't want to. You know, but I didn't like that point of view, really, that was trying to say, because it does tend to do something that I don't like to do, to lump people of one religion into a category, and I don't like it. It'd be like saying all Mormons are all Catholics are, you know, there's good and bad in every group, you know? And so that was kind of offensive to me. But there was a very bad attack, terrorist attack in the Kashmir region last night. And I want to play a little bit of it for you. And it is unfortunate what occurred.
The coke ovens
Oops.
in.
Where are we? I gotta make sure that the soundboard is on the right part. Sorry about that. That was the old Keir Starmer giving us his genius activities. And I'm I can barely tolerate the guy, seriously. And so let me get to the video of what happened in Kashmir. We're going to listen to that. And then I do want to go into some of the Ukraine stuff, because lately I really have some hard troubles with what's going on the Trumpster's side of the coin. Today he well, let me play this first for because just it's 5 minutes or so, maybe a little less. And it's really unfortunate that this has occurred, but it definitely has. And I listened to several Indian channels, and I was listening to, her name is Sharma, I think, and I like her accent quite a bit, and she's a good newscaster, and she was telling us about the events that occurred in Kashmir. And so I'm going to share them with you from her, 'cause and if you're looking for a good place to get world events news that isn't very twisted, you know, it's more middle of the road, it's she's a good one to listen to, and it's she's on several different channels. This one is called First Post, and the story is called Terrorists Kill At Least 26 Tourists in Kashmir's Pahalgam. And it's the show's called Vantage, and she is a very well spoken. Here we go. We're gonna wind her up and let her go. So the photo shows a lady sitting on the concrete next to her dead husband, who's just been, you know, who's been killed by these gunmen. This is horror. Those behind the hand, and Narendra Modi has said those behind this heinous act will be brought to justice. I'm afraid what they might do. I'm gonna take it to where she is starting.
In cozy think tanks, people often debate a question. What is terrorism? Is it religious? Is it political? Or is it a mix? Is it a movement or an ideology? Well, tonight I can show you. I can show you what terrorism looks like. A young woman sitting beside her husband's dead body. This heartbreak, this loss, this tragedy, this is what terrorism looks like. And today it came for Kashmir. The news trickled in around evening. Terrorists targeted tourists in Kashmir's Pahalgam, specifically the Baisaran Valley. This is a location off the main road in town. It's only accessible on foot. Reports say two or three armed men entered the valley and they shot the tourists assembled there. Survivors say it was a targeted killing that terrorists tried to identify non-Muslims and shot them. A video has emerged from the location. It shows the aftermath of the deadly attack. Take a look at this. The images are very disturbing. We advise viewer discretion. Reports say at least 20 people have been killed in this attack. Many of the survivors were rushed to a nearby hospital. Some of them are reportedly critical. Those who managed to escape are recounting the events. Listen to one such account.
लोगों ने आवाज दी है कि फायरिंग हो रही है और चलते जाइए बस ऐसे दौड़ा आगे आगे दौड़ते जा रहे थे हम लोग और पीछे से लोग आ रहे थे हमको धक्के दे रहे थे हम लोगों के पैरों में भी आ गए
She's talking about how they walked up and said a husband and child were with her and they said he looks like a non-Muslim and they killed him
कितने टूरिस्ट वहां पे थे
पांच हजार होंगे
Now,
these numbers and pictures and accounts make one thing quite clear, that this was a massive attack, a well-planned, targeted operation, possibly the deadliest attack on civilians in recent years in India. And who was behind it? One group has claimed responsibility. TRF, the Resistance Front, TRF, it's basically an offshoot of Pakistan's Lashkar-e-Toiba. This group emerged after 2019. That's when Article 370 was abolished, when Jammu and Kashmir lost its special powers and statehood. Reports say the terrorists fled after the attack, but their days could be numbered. Top Indian officials have promised to hunt them down. Prime Minister Narendra Modi is in Saudi Arabia right now. He's been briefed on the attack. Let me quote from his statement. Those behind this heinous attack will be brought to justice. They will not be spared. Their evil agenda will never succeed. Our resolve is to fight terrorism. To fight terrorism is unshakable, and it will get even stronger. Prime Minister Modi has also asked Home Minister Amit Shah to visit the attack site. Once there, the minister will take stock of the situation. Many countries are condemning this attack. So far, we've heard from Israel, Singapore, and Argentina. I'm sure others will join in soon. Now, there are many angles and many statements to decode here, and we will do some of that. But let's also dwell on those people for a moment, on what they went through. All they wanted was a nice holiday in the valleys of Kashmir, a few days of joy with their loved ones, a chance to soak in the beauty, a chance to forget their troubles and make new memories. That's what they came here for. We've all been there. Instead, these families were ripped apart. Those memories were tainted by blood. And this is exactly what the terrorists want. They want to drive fear into the hearts of people because if they don't, Kashmir will succeed. And if Kashmir succeeds, they will not. Just look at how many tourists were visiting Jammu and Kashmir.
She's going to go into the numbers of how they've been succeeding over the last few years and all true. You know, India is on the rise, and the events are going well. Pakistan, not so much. Pakistan's, you know, I don't have anything bad to say against Pakistan. I know quite a few Pakistanis as well, and I generally like them. You know, I have no trouble with Muslims, and it's always, you know, some bad, you know, bad actors are everywhere, and it's truly unfortunate. Let's see. I wanted to go to another series of things that shows that I wanted to save with you. Things that I saved to share with you, is what I meant to say. There's been a lot of discussion about Russia and Ukraine. Where is my... I'm going to play you the first few minutes of... Alex, some Alex for you, if I can get to him. Here he is. And he puts it pretty well in what he's going to do. We'll listen to no more than the first 5-7 minutes of this, you know. We won't go too far. But This is good stuff about Ukraine and about Vladimir Zelensky. He's kind of harsh on Trump here, and frankly, I happen to agree with him on this. I wish Trump would just stop sometimes. And I really hope that his goal is that if they don't do something by the 30th, if Kyiv doesn't go, not saying capitulate, but if they don't do something more serious than what they're doing right now, I truly hope they do walk away. Rubio says that's the plan. I hope that is the plan.
To be fast, too. And I think everybody in this, you know, at this time in NATO, they want to see this thing happen. So we have a deadline. And after that, we're going to have a very much different attitude. But I think it has a very good chance of getting done.
This is my video update on this Thursday afternoon, April the 24th, coming to you from Limassol, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news, and let's start things off with Zelensky in South Africa. The Green Goblin made a trip to South Africa. He met with South African leader Ramaphosa. And Zelensky's goal in his travels to South Africa is to try and pull South Africa apart from Russia. And Zelensky said during a statement to the media that Russia is destabilizing Africa, that Russia is no good for South Africa, and that Russia is no good for Africa in general.
That's nonsense,
and
by
so
the way.
Alensky's
Russia isn't destabilizing Africa.
Mission
They're
is to
Africa.
Poison relations between South Africa and African countries in general against Russia, and to try and move them more towards Kyiv and the collective West. A mission that will never happen, has zero chance of success, because at the moment, South Africa has terrible relations with the United States, and South Africa needs all the support that it can get from BRICS, from China, and from Russia. So there is zero chance of pulling apart South Africa and Russia. But Zelensky, he will take whatever opportunity that comes to him to leave Kyiv and to travel somewhere else, because right now at the moment, Ukraine and Kyiv is the last place that Zelensky wants to be. So if it's South Africa, if the powers that be order him to travel to South Africa to take up a cause that has zero possibility of ever being successful, then he'll take it. Because
I was thinking that same thing, actually, because a lot of the news about what's going on in Kyiv these days, he is not quite persona non grata, but it's getting worse and worse and worse for him. And he can't have elections. They would boot him out. And I think it's time we cut ties and quit trying to hold their hands. There's quite a bit about Europe saying the same.
Because it means that he doesn't have to hang out in Kyiv. And Zelensky also, as he was speaking to the media, he said that right now, Trump has Ukraine's terms on his desk. Isn't that interesting? So we had the Trump peace plan. Trump peace plan. And now Zelensky has turned it around and said, no, 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 there is no consideration of the Trump peace plan. What we have done Ukraine and our UK European partners is that we have put together our own terms, and we've put it on the desk of Trump, so he has these terms, and this is how we will move forward with a peace in Ukraine. So we've gone from Trump's peace plan to the UK, the EU, and Zelensky putting together their terms for a negotiation with Project Ukraine.
Well, and he keeps, he doesn't mention this in his show, but I wanted to add here that Zelensky has always done this. He has a habit of doing this, and he has done it for at least the last 2 years. And remember, last year's first was his victory plan, then was his I have that backwards. First was his peace plan, then his victory plan, you know, was coming up, and he had the first in Switzerland, the second one he had in New York last fall, and then now he's doing it again, and every time he goes, he just keeps going to other places, and he's not getting the receptions that he used to get, and he's not getting the ideas that he used to, and he's still trying to tell people what they're going to tell Putin he has to do. He knows he can't tell Putin what to do. So his goal has been to get the rest of the world to tell Putin what to do. And under Biden, he was always allowed to drive that train. And Biden was always, right there with the bloodthirsty European globalists that wanted to keep on trucking. But now he's getting less and less. But he's still trying to tell people what to do. He's going to tell Trump what to do now. Good luck with that.
And that has been presented to Trump. An ultimatum has been presented to Trump. What a world we live in, huh? Yeah. There are reports that that the talks in London, the talks that crashed out before they even started, that not even Kellogg showed up. At the end of the day, there are reports, I can't confirm this, so I'm not 100% sure on this, but I did read reports that Keith Kellogg even backed out of the London talks. I don't know. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But according to Zelensky, what was
I saw those reports too, and he was not there. So yeah, it was bad. It was really bad. There was I might even have another clip I could play you for that.
Discussed is this new European, UK, Ukraine peace terms, and they've been sent over to Trump, and it's now up to Trump to capitulate and agree. That's right, Trump. It's time for the US to agree to Ukraine's terms. Yeah, well, you know, Trump, he's getting very frustrated with the Green Goblin. According to his spokeswoman, Carolyn Leavitt, she said that Trump is getting very frustrated with Zelensky conducting megaphone diplomacy. Those are the words that she used. Megaphone. One second. Yeah, megaphone diplomacy. Because she's saying that Zelensky goes to the media and expresses his dissatisfaction. He airs out his grievances with the negotiations to the media in a very public way, and Trump does not like that. Trump does not like that. Trump is conducting his foreign policy on Truth Social posts, but he doesn't like the fact that Zelensky is going to the media and talking about how he doesn't like the U.S.-Russia negotiations and the Trump peace plan. All right. Anyway, that is what Carolyn Leavitt said.
I find that pretty comical too. Trump's going to be upset that Zelensky's a camera hog, and Trump's a camera hog. Trump's a camera hog. Trump's a true social hog. Everything's done by social media, and he's gonna bitch about Zelensky doing the same thing. It's kind of comical.
We are getting reports that confirmation that Witkoff on Friday, according to Axios, will be going to Moscow to meet with Dmitriev, perhaps Putin as well, most likely Putin. And this is going to be his fourth meeting with Putin, possibly. A lot of meetings with Putin. He gets along with Dmitriev. They found common ground, Dmitriev and Witkoff, because they both want to do business, basically. Witkoff would absolutely jump at June 2024 terms. Istanbul Plus, he would definitely go for it so that the U.S. and Russia can start doing business together. That's Witkoff. If Witkoff was making the decisions, we would have had a June 2024 agreement 3 months ago, and the U.S. and Russia would already be doing business. But it's not Witkoff's decision to make. It is President Trump's decision to make. But Witkoff will be going to Moscow.
It's pretty funny that Zelensky has been passing out all this information that we aren't going to, even if the U.S. recognizes Crimea, we're not going to agree to that. We won't capitulate. We're done. Isn't that nonsense? What all we're doing here? It's just amazing. And I tell you what, he'd be a good little dictator if you could figure out how to get him to be one. There was a lot of airstrikes on Kyiv overnight, quite a few of them, and there was quite a few talks on that. Let's see if I can get to there. Russian forces continue to perform combat missions. Diplomat says Kyiv's killings of Russian reporters will not go unanswered. They killed a couple of more. Where is it? Well, we are... Oh, there was something, you know what? I'm sorry I got distracted here, but I'm going to go to there. There's a couple of important ones to go. Have you heard what happened in Romania? And the cancellation of Romania's presidential election was overturned. So you remember when Calin Gorgescu's victory last year in the first round was nullified by the Constitutional Court. It's been the appellate court has turned that over. So basically, here's the story. An appeals court in Romania suspended Constitutional Court's decision to annul the result of last year's presidential election, won unexpectedly by independent candidate Calin Gorgescu. Local media outlets reported Thursday. Gorgescu, a vocal NATO critic and opponent of arming Ukraine, made the headlines in November 2024 after getting 23% of the vote in the first rounds of the election. Constitutional Court invalidated the result, citing irregularities in his campaign and, gee, here's a surprise, intelligence reports alleging Russian interference. You just get to use that all over the world. Russia's interfering in everybody's elections. Claims that Moscow has denied. On Thursday, Judge Alexandru Vasile of the Ploiesti Court of Appeal overturned the annulment, according to Hot News. The prosecutor's office attached to that court has filed such an appeal. George Simion, leader of the Alliance for the Union of Romanians party, welcomed the decision as a return to democracy and constitutional order in a post on X. He added, however, that the Central Election Bureau, which barred Gorgesco from running in a planned May vote, ignores it and continues its activity. In February, Gorgesco was indicted on 6 criminal charges, because that's what you do. If you have somebody who's popular, you allege all kinds of criminal activity against him. And he got 6 criminal charges, including allegedly plotting anti-constitutional acts and promoting fascist, racist, or xenophobic ideologies. He denies all the charges, insisting the criminal case against him is part of a campaign orchestrated by Romanian deep state. The politician, who's under a 60-day travel ban, will remain under court supervision for another 60 days. How do you like that? Preliminary findings of the investigation into the irregularities found they were likely caused by consulting firm associated with the pro-Western National Liberal Party running a campaign on behalf of an opponent of Gorgescu, which backfired. So we got troubles everywhere. Let's see. Kremlin explains why Putin respects Trump. Do you remember the photo that he gave him, or the painting that he gave him the other day that was very, you know, he sent him the painting. You imagine what he would get, if anything, from the old Green Goblin? He wouldn't get much. President Putin respects his U.S. counterpart Trump because he sees him as a strong personality who is nonetheless open to productive dialogue, says Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov. In an interview with the French magazine Le Point on Wednesday, Peskov stressed that while Putin and Trump have similar positions on some matters, differences on many others remain, as each defends his country's interests above all else. So that's what I think about Putin. You know, he might be a tough politician that does some of the same things we claim our politicians do, but he's taking care of his country. Still, he noted that both leaders understand the importance of diplomacy. What unites them is that they both understand the absurdity of refusing dialogue. What unites them is their willingness to resolve the most difficult issues through discussion. Exactly what was missing with the previous Biden administration, said Peskov. Reflecting on Trump as a person who weathered numerous scandals during his first term, including 2 impeachments, the spokesman noted that he managed to come back from them because he's a powerful political leader, but also because he has a very strong personality. When asked if this is why Putin respects Trump, Peskov responded, "Certainly, yes. Putin, being a strong man himself, appreciates strong men." In recent weeks, the Trump administration has been engaged in efforts to restore bilateral ties with Russia and resolve the Ukraine conflict, with both sides praising the diplomacy as productive. I agree. On Wednesday, U.S. Secretary of State Rubio said America now has a better understanding what the Russian position is on the crisis. Moscow's key... I don't know how he's just coming to that conclusion now. How do you not know if you're in his position already? Moscow's key conditions for ending the conflict are Ukrainian neutrality, demilitarization, recognition of new territorial reality on the ground. You know, denazification would be nice, although I doubt they could enforce that. They also want something to do with limitations on what the military, not just demilitarization, but limitations on what and when they can expand. On the same day, Trump noted that he expected to have easier time dealing with Ukraine Zelensky than with Putin, adding that, "I think we have a deal with Russia. We have to get a deal with Zelensky." Well, you know where that's going to go. Zelensky doesn't want anything. U.S. leaders also indicate plans to meet with Putin shortly after his upcoming trip to the Middle East in May. That'll be entertaining. I hope it happens. I really do. The Bild, the German newspaper, says that Kiev's going to lose U.S. support. And officials in Ukraine now feel the fear. Sheesh. fear the worst-case scenario. Leadership in Kyiv is bracing for a worst-case scenario in which President Trump cuts off all American support. Frankly, I hope that's what they do. The German tabloid Bild is reporting, citing anonymous sources within the Ukrainian government. Trump has reportedly increased pressure on Ukraine to accept Washington's final offer to resolve the conflict. He's also warned that negotiations between Moscow and Kyiv, if they stall, the U.S. is going to take a pass and withdraw from its role as a mediator. That'd be a mistake, old green goblin. What is on paper and what is being signaled to us in the negotiations is unacceptable, Bild wrote on Thursday, quoting a Ukrainian diplomat. We are preparing for the worst-case scenario, and that means an end to U.S. support, another unnamed government insider told the paper. Now, I think they might have the support until the Biden money runs out, and I hope we don't continue to fund this dog, but I have zero faith in that. U.S. president has been pushing for resolution of the conflict. We know this. We'll go to the next part. According to Bild, some officials in Kyiv hope that Trump's personal jabs at Zelensky are merely his way of applying pressure. Our hope is that it was Trump's negotiation tactic, the outlet cited a Ukrainian government insider as saying. The report added that Kyiv is now trying to renegotiate with Washington while simultaneously seeking support from its European sponsors. There's a little bit more of that, but I won't read it. There's a interesting, here's, where is this? Let's get to it. Dun, 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 dun. There's a lot of new business going on in Russia. That is for sure. Where is the... the Ukrainian must compromise, according to President Duda of the Polish, who's the Polish president. But there was another where they were. So get this: there's a wish list now for the military in, for the diplomats from Ukraine. Asking for new, for more stuff. They want more things. And it's, they have asked for another $350 billion. Meanwhile, there's talk that Orban is going to reject keeping Russia's money longer on the sanctions, and they might have to give back Russians $300 billion. That they have frozen. Quite a few. But even Poland is coming out, and Poland's been the most positive for Ukraine since the very beginning. But here comes Duda saying Ukraine will have to compromise to achieve a peace settlement with Russia. He said this with an interview with Euronews Thursday, saying that a mutual lasting peace has to be built on mutual concessions. Warsaw has been one of the strongest supporters of Kyiv. It has to be compromised, in my opinion. Each side will have to give in some sense, but Ukraine will have to give in because it's probably what's going to happen. Discussing U.S.-led peace efforts, he argued that only President Trump, who he described as someone who plays very tough, is capable of meeting an end to the hostilities. So people are recognizing it. And I think on the European side, more than one country is starting to wake up to this fact. And so, on acting as a mediator in ongoing negotiations, Trump reportedly presented a peace framework, which Kyiv rejected earlier this week. Proposal said to have included recognition of Crimea as Russian peninsula, where most of the population is ethnically Russian, held a referendum to rejoin Russia in 2014. Excuse me. Ukraine's Vladimir Zelensky insisted on Wednesday Kyiv will never recognize Crimea as Russian, which elicited a sharp rebuke from the old Trumpster. Moscow has also ruled out territorial concessions, saying the status of Crimea and the four other Ukrainian regions that joined Russia after referendum in 22 is not up for negotiation. And you know what? More power to them, because they're holding the territory, and who's going to take it back? Moscow has insisted that a peace deal must recognize reality on the ground. Yeah, I think they're going to have to, if you're going to get rid of this conflict, you're going to have to basically, somebody's going to have to capitulate. And it ain't going to be Russia, sadly. There's something that is really troubling, and scams are everywhere. But think about this. There's an article here called Scam Ukraine. How Kyiv's vultures disrespect the dead and cash in on national grief. And there's several different talks about it. And these numbers are ridiculously low. They aren't remotely accurate. Zelensky's been lying about the number of casualties he's divided at least by 10, if not by 20. But tens of thousands of families across Ukraine are living in anguish, still searching for answers about loved ones who have vanished amid the ongoing conflict. Now, people disappear on both sides, by the way, so I imagine this isn't just alone about Ukraine. Desperate for even the smallest shred of information, many are easy prey for fraudulent people who take advantage of their vulnerability, often extracting large sums of money under false pretenses. Some of the examples follow. A murky accounting of the missing. So this is one of the big problems, is they don't know where anybody is. Getting an accurate count of Ukraine's missing persons is no easy task. Earlier this year, Artur Dobrotserdov, the country's commissioner for persons missing under special circumstances, revealed that the official registry lists over 71,000 individuals, with roughly 31,000 reported missing in 2024. These figures include both civilian and military personnel. In a February interview with NBC, Zelensky admitted the true number may be higher. And listen to these BS numbers. We have 46,000 plus killed soldiers. That's a big-ass plus, that's all I'm saying. Tens of thousands more are missing in action or are in captivity. But we don't know for sure. Missing in action could mean that they're dead or captured. We're talking about tens of thousands. That's his numbers. Not long before, journalist and Ukrainian Armed Forces serviceman Vladimir Boyko challenged the numbers. Following Zelensky's statement to Piers Morgan that 45,100 soldiers had been lost in combat, Boyko clarified via Facebook that Zelensky was only referring to those whose bodies had been recovered, identified, and formally documented. The majority of the dead, those whose bodies couldn't be retrieved, are officially listed as missing, Boyko wrote. They'll remain on their unit's rosters for up to 3 years. At that point, Boyko estimated that around 63,000 individuals were recorded in the Unified Registry of Persons Missing. Those numbers are horse pucky, completely. From fake doctors to fortune tellers is the next paragraph. Scammers have capitalized on this chaos, targeting heartbroken families desperate for news. According to Ukrainian outlet Abazrivatil, fraudsters carefully monitor social media posts for clues, especially from relatives seeking missing loved ones. Authorities say women are most frequently targeted. Once a target is identified, scammers spin detailed tales, often claiming to be former colleagues or friends of the missing person. They say they have contacts in Ukraine's security or intelligence services and insist they have verified information, usually that the person is alive and being held captive. They demand payments to cover things like food or medicine for the captive. One widespread scam involves prisoner exchange lists. Con artists promise to fast-track a loved one's release in exchange for a hefty fee, backing up their claims with forged documents and fake records. In one case, a scammer swindled a family out of 200,000 hryvnia, about $4,800, claiming the father would be included in a prisoner exchange. The scammer disappeared after receiving the money, according to Ukraine's coordination headquarters. Another common plot involves callers posing as doctors. They claim the missing person is alive, but needs expensive treatment. These frauds exploit the emotional shock, pressuring the family members to make quick wire transfers before they can process what is happening. Some schemes are even more brazen. Scammers may invent fake debts, claiming the missing person borrowed money just before the war began. Now it's up to the family to repay it, often under threat. Additionally, many extortionists pose as psychics, fortune tellers, mediums who target families of missing soldiers. Relatives turn to these individuals willing to do anything to know what happened to their loved one. Victims may be given false information regarding the fate of their missing family member or prisoner of war and offer dubious services like protection spells or energy support. If scammers manage to extract money from a victim, they will return again and again, finding new reasons to demand more money. How to game the system. Under Ukrainian law, families of soldiers listed as missing in action are entitled to receive their salaries, typically around 120,000 hryvnias a month, $2,900. Immediate family members split half that amount, while the rest is held by the soldier's unit till death is concerned. If death certificate is issued, a full amount is released. This system, while intended to provide financial relief, is full of abuse. In late January, Ukraine's State Bureau of Investigation announced that a military accountant in Odessa had been rerouting missing soldiers' payments to a friend's bank account. With his supervisor neglecting to double-check the records, the accountant allegedly stole 2.3 million hryvnias, $55,000. He now faces up to 8 years in prison for gross negligence. But sometimes the pressure to defraud comes from officials themselves. Strana.ua reported that the deputy mayor of Podolsk advised a woman searching for her missing son to declare him dead so she could get millions and buy an apartment. Betrayal by family friend. In one of the most shocking cases, a court in Kryvyi Rog recently sentenced Dmitry Duman for a heartless scheme that preyed on a family friend. Duman had been close with Elena Krylenka since childhood, later befriended her husband, Junior Sergeant Roman Krylenka. When Roman went missing during the combat mission, Elena reached out to Duman for help. At first, Duman did help, introducing her to a financier who assisted in securing the monthly compensation. But once he learned Elena would be receiving 120,000 hryvnias monthly, he launched a scam. Claiming he had powerful connections in a security service, Duman began charging her for fake updates and fabricated plans to include Roman in prisoner swaps. He even warned her not to believe any reports of Roman's death. Over 6 months, he posed as an intelligence officer through messaging apps, collecting more than 60 payments from her. Eventually, the truth came out. Roman had been buried in Kryvyi Rog in July 2024. Duman was convicted of large-scale fraud during wartime and impersonating an official. He received a 6-year prison sentence, forfeit his property, and was ordered to pay Elena over 1.2 million hryvnias, 28,000 in damages, plus 100,000 in moral compensation. The true cost of grief, experts cited by comments.ua estimate that in just the past 2 years, scammers have stolen between 1.5 and 1.7 billion hryvnias, $36 to $40 million from grieving families. That may be only the tip of the iceberg. Many victims stay silent, either out of shame or fear of reprisal. As long as families continue to live in limbo, clinging to hope and desperate for answers, Ukraine's missing persons crisis will remain fertile ground for exploitation. This war needs to be over. Ladles and jelly spoons needs to be done. These stories are just horrifying. You know, that's just terrible. And finally today, I think I shall tell you about, well, maybe not finally. I might have time to do two. The joke of the coalition of the willing is now, you know, one for the record books. This coalition of the willing, Starmer and his, oh gee, we got a huge army. We'll come protect you, Ukraine. We'll send our soldiers over there. You got a 70,000 person army. But 70,000 people in your army in England. How are you going to protect yourself, let alone Ukraine? So you're going to send them over. And it's all nonsense because nobody, you know, how many times has Putin said, you put Western boots on the ground, we'll treat them just like boots on the ground from Ukraine. Don't do it. Bad plan. France and the UK displayed a weakening resolve to put boots on the ground in Ukraine during their recent talks in London. That fiasco. Defense chiefs of a number of European NATO states have been debating deploying forces to Ukraine as part of their self-titled Coalition of the Willing. The idea led by France and the UK was purposed as a means of providing Kiev with security guarantees in the event of a ceasefire. Moscow rejects it outright. According to Times, the UK-French plan was rolled back during the talks in the UK capital Wednesday. Sir Keir Starmer and President Macron of France have offered to deploy troops to Ukraine to keep peace as part of a coalition of the willing, but during talks, there's no commitment to that. However, a defense source told the outlet the UK is not prepared to abandon its plans entirely. Some European officials realize that Moscow would never tolerate the deployment of a force of NATO members to Ukraine. Russia has warned it will consider such a troop presence as NATO deployment under the guise of peacekeepers or otherwise, and it will they will be treated as valid military targets. I mean, how many times does that have to be stated before Starmer and Macron will get it? They are, they just need some relevance somehow, and they're not receiving it. I don't know, friends and neighbors. I wanted to spend a little bit of time telling you again about my plans for the show, stretching it on to, this is the last one of the week. If you're hearing it on Friday, tune in Sunday evening at 9 p.m. and you can listen live at that time. I am moving to the 9 o'clock hour because I like it. And, you know, for a little while it'll be played at the 4 o'clock hour too, so you can listen to it there. Remember that International Flavor, I have my website, internationalflavor.com, and you can listen to all of my podcasts there because they immediately get uploaded to there. You can listen to our podcasts for the entire station at damradio.com/podcasts. And if you wish to contact me, you may do so by Gmail. Well, I use Gmail, but it's actually samuelt@internationalflavor.com. And I it can also be reached at, you know, I don't read them very often, the live at Damn Radio. I don't read them all that often, but I probably should start doing that, don't you think? And I think I will also see if there were any new shorts that were going to come up. Let's see here. We're going to read or talk about just one or two other things. There was an interesting story that I don't know that, and it was their security chief who said it. Western aggression could target Russian nuclear response, says a security chief. Sergei Shoigu has warned. And also, remember when Putin has an ICC arrest warrant, just like Netanyahu has one? Now, and has had, and nobody's arresting him. Nobody's doing anything. Well, there's a Putin's ICC arrest warrant is invalid in Italy, is the news story. Now, this is the law, so we're gonna talk about the law. Who would have ever thunk it? Russian President Putin will not be at risk of being arrested in Italy under an international criminal court warrant, as officials never completed the procedures required to make it valid, said local media outlets. The Hague-based ICC issued warrants for Putin and Russian Commissioner for Child Rights, Maria Lvova-Belova, in 2023, over alleged unlawful deportation and transfer of children from former Ukrainian territories. The ICC issued additional warrants for senior Russian military commanders, including former Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu and General Valery Gerasimov, a year later, accusing them of attacking civilian infrastructure in Ukraine. Moscow does not recognize the court's jurisdiction, has denied both accusations, and declared the warrants null and void. Similar to what Netanyahu has done, by the way. La Repubblica reported on Thursday that the warrants for Russian officials are not actually effective in Italy at this time. According to the outlet, the Justice Ministry had never sent the warrant to the Court of Appeal in Rome, and therefore, documentation needed for the arrest to be conducted has never been received. Corriere della Sera also confirmed the report, saying the court's failure to sign off on the warrant transformed it into a piece of paper with no effect. There's a surprise. The failure to file the necessary paperwork is not likely to have been the result of an oversight or a coincidence, said Repubblica, suggesting instead that it was a political choice. A Corriere della Sera concluded similarly, noting that the warrants for the Russian commanders have also been left invalidated. A decision reflecting the Italian government's position that heads of state and government are protected from prosecution is likely behind this development, the outlet added. Diplomatic immunity does not apply to other Russian officials mentioned in the ICC warrants. Nevertheless, neither the Russian president nor other officials or commanders are likely to travel to Italy anyway, as some are subject to personal EU sanctions. Despite this, Russian culture minister Olga Lyubimova is set to travel to Italy to attend the funeral of Pope Francis, according to the Kremlin. Well, I believe that is about gonna wrap it up for us today. There is news that Louis Vuitton is registering trademarks in Russia. Tell you what, Russia is doing pretty well financially, and now look what they're getting. Louis Vuitton. Isn't that nice? French luxury brand Louis Vuitton has registered up to 6 new trademarks in Russia. Isn't that fantastic? We shall read more about that tomorrow, because another South Korean car giant is registering multiple new patents in Russia as well. Well, I hope you have enjoyed the show. I hope you join us in again this coming week. Remember that I am changing times and going to evenings, and also going Sunday through Thursday evening. So I appreciate you. Meanwhile, take care. Have a very nice weekend. And please feel free to join me next week.